You're listening to Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast discussing Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is Spanish football journalist and scout David Cartledge. David Cartledge is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. David joins the program to discuss Atletico's 5-1 thrashing. 5-1 thrashing of Las Palmas over the weekend, that Atleti's first win of the season, and it really kickstarts their campaign. We'll discuss great performances from some of Atleti's younger players, including Lucas Hernandez, Tomas Partey, Angel Correa. We'll discuss a great game from Koke in midfield, and we'll talk about if Diego Simeone is really about to commit to a youth movement here at the start of the 2017-18 season. We'll also do a deep dive on Atleti's transfer policy and a wild summer of rumors, some action, but a lot of inaction on the part of Atleti's board. And we'll also look ahead to the Champions League group stage. It's our first podcast since the group draw was held. Atleti, of course, in a group with Chelsea, Roma, and Karabag. Pretty interesting group there. Before we continue, I'd like to remind our listeners that you can like Into the Calderon on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon, and you can find Colt Gennaro Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. In addition, a very exciting announcement, our Patreon page is now live, so you can give to the show like we give the show to you every week. You can find out more at patreon.com, that is patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. Again, that is patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. We'll be right back with David Cartledge after this.
It's one of my favorite cities in Spain, and yeah, I love living here. Yeah, I feel very at home here, more than any of the Spanish cities. So yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely on my list of places to go when I come to Spain, which is still going to be a little while, unfortunately, but saving up the money.
good, man.
Yeah, awesome. Let's start with La Liga Whip Around, which is a feature we started really middle of last season, and just going around the league, looking at the score lines and saying a few words about each game that was played. Pretty interesting weekend, some really, really good games. We'll start on Friday with Real Sociedad, a very impressive 3-0 win over Villarreal. Villarreal not off to the best start, David. They're having issues in goal now, again, with Andres Fernandez out.
Yeah, it doesn't really surprise me what's gone wrong at Villarreal. You know, I think they've got a good squad, but there's a lot of tension there between the coach and the fans, and the fans have never really liked Fran Escriba, and I think it's now starting to spill over onto the field, and you can see it now. Morale's a little bit low. Bruno isn't in the team. You know, they're waiting for him to come back, and things right now are kind of on standby at Villarreal, and I think they need to make a decision with Escriba. They have to need to fully back him, or they need to, you know, or get rid and everything like that, because like it doesn't seem too clear to me what they really want to do with him.
Yeah, I think he's a fine coach, but I think they need someone a little bit better than him, and the fans really have never taken to him.
No, it's funny. It's got parallels with when Ernesto Valverde was there. I think people forget that Valverde was there. You know, he had success at Athletic, and now he's at Barcelona, but he also had a time at Villarreal, and it was very unsuccessful. It's the only blot on his managerial copybook, and it was because he brought this style of football, or was a little bit more, I'm not going to say negative, it was just balanced. And Villarreal fans didn't really like that because they're so used to seeing what they had under Manuel Pellegrini. Mm-hmm. Marcelino was quite expansive as well, you know, in time he was. And right now they feel they're playing negative football, and that's just how it is. And that's not working well for them.
Yeah, no goals through the first 2 weeks after splashing the cash this summer to get Carlos Bacca back to Spain. So they have a lot of work to do to turn this around after the international break. Real Betis get their first win of the season, 2-1 winners over Celta Vigo. Really good performance, I thought, from Betis. Andres Guardado laying on both goals from Sergio Leon and Zufadel on either side of halftime.
You know, they've got a new coach, a new style, mm-hmm. and the turnover of players is extreme. You know, like a lot of players have left, and then a lot of, you know, Dani Ceballos, who is the centre of the team, has gone. So yep. They've had to find a new heart, a new core of the team. And they're still discovering that where it is. And the big signing, the marquee signing, Bilbao Debus from Montpellier, hasn't even played yet. You know, he's not fit enough yet. So he needs to play as well. He needs to come back into the team. So I've said Betis need maybe 8 to 10 games, really, to get up to speed. And then we can start and judge them. But sure. Yeah, this was a good start. This is the sort of performance what I think as a team you build on.
Definitely. on to Saturday, Barcelona with a pretty easy 2-0 win at Alaves. Lionel Messi notching his 350th goal in La Liga. I am pretty worried about Alaves this season, David. I don't know how worried you are about them, but I've got them tipped to go down.
No, I completely concur. I did a few La Liga preview pods, and I said pretty much Alaves are going to experience a major drop-off because they lost an excellent coach, and they've lost a lot of good players as well who were loan signings. And I don't think the loan signings or the general signings what have come in are good enough to replace those who have left. And that was just such a special year. And I agree, I think they're going to be knee-deep in a relegation fight this season.
Levante and Depor playing out a 2-2 draw. Levante, as annoying as ever, they go down to 10 men and still get the draw.
When Levante went down, they didn't really lose any big star.
That's
apart
true.
From Camarasa. And then, even then, Camarasa was kind of on the fringes of the squad because he'd had a major falling out, so he'd been dropped. So Levante have basically had this team for the past, 2 years now, and then this is the third year of this team together, and they managed to keep everybody together, and that's really, really important. They didn't have to ship out 8 players and bring another new 8 players in and start a new team. They did not have to do that. And we see what happens when you have continuity. And they've added really, really well. Ivy scored at the weekend, and
yep.
He's a player I've backed a lot. I spoke with some Premier League and Championship clubs about Ivy a year ago, and I said you need to look at him. He's somebody you need to follow for the next maybe year or so, you know, because I think he's going to end up leaving Sevilla Atletico and going to a better move, and I think he's going to have a big year, and I think next summer people's going to be like, oh, why didn't we take a chance on him? And I think you're going to see why.
Watching him this weekend, he looks like a player.
He's got it all. He's kind of like Fernando Llorente. He's good in the air. He's very strong. He's very powerful, but he's also good with his feet, and he's a good mobility-wise as well. And he's just a really interesting player, I think. And you know, he's not going to be expensive still in a year's time. And he's very young as well. And it's somebody I think teams should be looking at. I really, really like what I see from him every time I watch him play.
Girona 1-0 winners over Malaga, their first ever win in La Liga. Strong start to the season for them. What do you like about Girona, David?
They're just playing with a lot of energy, I think, and a lot of vibrancy, and they've come up, and I think against Atleti, they showed a little bit of naivety to let Atleti get back in the game. They didn't shut up when they could have done so. But I understand that. They were playing on emotions. They were in front of the home fans against Atleti. But yeah, this weekend, they kind of found the balance and managed to shut out the game. And that was a great win for them, and they'll continue to play like this because, you know, you can come to La Liga in two ways, okay? You either come up and you play nervously, and you just try to force the opposition not to play. And in the end, you lose focus on your own game. Now, Getafe are doing that. But Girona and Levante are playing the other way. They're playing without fear. They're playing with a lot of intelligence, but a lot of energy as well. And they're trying to scare teams who are already in La Liga. So those are the two ways you can come up. And Girona and Levante are reaping the rewards of that.
Yeah, I really like how both of them are doing, Girona especially. On to Sunday, Eibar and Athletic. Eibar 0, Athletic 1. Arrizabalaga does what he has done basically forever, scoring a winning goal in the first half. And my love for Kepa continues to grow. I firmly believe he's already one of the best goalkeepers in Spain.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he is. I think he's like about a year ahead of his development. You know, I think he's come on incredibly fast, and he's going to be challenging De Gea very closely very soon.
Yeah.
And this is crazy because this probably wasn't meant to happen for maybe another 2 years. He's still a very, very young goalkeeper, but he's already exceptionally good. Now, I made the point during the summer at the Euros, everybody was talking about Donnarumma, but Kepa is every bit good as Gigi Donnarumma. He really, really is. And I'm not just saying that because of my Spanish bias or anything like that, but he genuinely is.
Yeah, he's great. And honestly, I've been thinking about Jan Oblak's departure for a little while now since the PSG rumors kind of came back to life. Kepa is the guy I want if Oblak leaves. I know a deal is going to be tough with Athletic because of their policy, but he's the guy I want. Like, Kepa is exceptional, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely understandable. He is. I think a lot of teams are going to really look at him, and I think one of those teams will be Real Madrid, actually. I think they'll kind of get fed up with the whole De Gea pursuit, and they'll look at Kepa and see that he's at Athletic, he's attainable, and yeah, I think Real Madrid will end up going for him. We'll see, but that's my prediction.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen. Espanyol 0, Leganés 1. Leganés 2 wins from 2. 2-1-0 wins. Mantovani getting the winner in this one. Strong start for Leganés, who kind of survived by the grace of three teams being much worse than them last season. But what have you seen from them the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, they're improving a lot. You know, that they just, again, you know, that they've got some players who I think they've brought in some interesting players as well. They're kind of surprising me a little bit. They've kept a lot of players who they had last season, but they've also added carefully. And I honestly expected them to be like Alaves and to be down there at the bottom, but they've not. So they're the one team who's kind of surprised me so far, who I'm feeling I'm really, really wrong about them. So yeah, I'm interested to see, because like I say, they brought in well. They brought Raso in from Athletic, Zaldúa as well, and then they kept Gabriel, I think, which was key. Mantovani's a great captain. They got Cuela from Sporting as a goalkeeper, who's a really good goalkeeper who I know really, really well. So I'm glad for them. You know, I'm always happy to be proved wrong, and this is one of those cases.
Yeah, they are very intriguing this season. Gabriel Pires, Guerrero, Simonowski, I think that's a pretty tasty trio up top. Getafe 0, Sevilla 1, the third 1-0 result on Sunday. Gonzo did that, which, okay, sure. I wasn't expecting him to do that.
Yeah. This was a terrible game. I think this was probably the worst game of the weekend. It was atrocious. Yeah. And this one bit of skill from Gonzo, which basically sums up the game, is because he was terrible as well again. And even though he scored, he was absolutely awful, and Sevilla were awful as well. But Sevilla are still finding their way, and I think by the end of September they will really be up to speed, and I'd expect a lot better for them, because right now they're nothing. They're producing nothing at the moment, and I think Berizzo is trying to change too much too soon, and for me, he needs to find his best starting 11 and then rotate from there, because right now he's doing it the opposite way around. He's rotating before finding his best 11.
Yeah, you made that point yesterday on Twitter, and I agree with it. Like, Sevilla are not playing anywhere near the Berizzo style. They look very poor right now, but they'll be fine. They have a lot of talent here, and I think they'll be really good after the international break. Finally, on Sunday, probably the best game of the weekend, Real Madrid 2, Valencia 2. Very entertaining game, very fast-paced, especially at the end. Some world-class goals from Marco Asensio, as we are getting used to seeing from him. Carlos Soler also scored. Jeffrey Kondogbia scored, showing how improved Valencia's midfield is. Just really good stuff. And Valencia, I think, are a team that can totally be a factor in the Europa League race. I really like what they've built. I really like what they bought this summer. They've bought wisely. They've bought economically. So, good result for them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to talk about the game itself, you know, it really was peak entertainment. And I made the point, like, this is what the sort of game that you package your league on and you sell it to, you know, football these days, you know, we talk about marketing it abroad and making it bigger. Well, you know, if I'm the league of cheaps, I'm showing everybody, when you're discussing a new TV deal, you show them this game, because you say this is what we can give you. And it was attacking player, it was fast paced as well, so the things that maybe people say the Premier League has what La Liga doesn't, well, they were all here, and the quality was there as well, and that's really important. And stars of tomorrow, Carlos Soler, Marco Asensio, that's really, really important. So the game itself was just, it was pretty much perfect from an entertainment point of view. Valencia, yeah, really, really good start of the season. The one thing, the main, you know, we talk about signings, we talk about everything, but the main thing is they've actually got a competent coach in for once.
Yeah, they do.
It's not somebody who's Lim's friend, who's an associate, who's on the books of an agent. They wanted a good coach, they got a good coach, and now the players are being coached. You know, and that is really, really important. We forget that sometimes when we talk about signings and big transfers and all this money. Sometimes people have to coach, and Marcelino's coaching Valencia, making those players better, and we saw evidence of that last night.
Yeah, he's a very, very good coach. Always rated him pretty highly, and he can take this Valencia team pretty far, I think. And this is the start of the true start of the project for them, I think. This is definitely a result you build on.
It looks serious for once. You know, Valencia, you can start and take them seriously now. You know, there's been many false dawns, but I think this time they've got their stuff together, and between now and the transfer window ending, they might bring one or two more in as well, and then there will be a real danger, I feel.
Agreed. Now, the one result we did not mention, Las Palmas 1, Atletico Madrid 5. That is Las Palmas 1, Atletico 5. Atletico, the high scorers of the weekend, which is not something we say very often about them. But,
This was very strange. Just caught me by surprise as well, you know. I did not expect to see Atleti score this number of goals. And, yeah. they probably is now won't score more than one in each game for the next 5 weeks or something.
Probably. This means we're going to score like 5 goals in the next 4 or 5 games. So, great. That's going to be fun to write about. But no, this was a really fun game. And it started very early with the... I have a few key performances I want to highlight from this game. And we'll start with Correa, who scored the opening goal. He scored in 3 straight league games dating back to last season. And this was just a stunning goal. Dribbling effectively through 4 defenders before poking it home from about 15 yards out. Just, he's really starting to solidify himself in Simeone's plan. I'm not trying to get too carried away, but it does look like something has kind of clicked for him.
Yeah, it's about time, and you'll know too well, you know, like when I let you get new signings in, it takes a long time for them, you feel, to reintegrate and become part of the squad. A lot of the time, they just don't even make it, and they never really become anything at the club, and then they have to go. Correa, I guess it maybe seemed like he could have been one of the ones who was going this summer, you know, but then obviously the ban happened, so then you think, oh, all right, he must have to stay. And now he's taking his opportunities, and he kind of does look like you say, something, the penny has dropped with him, and he knows what is required of him from his manager, and I completely understand that now, and he's playing fantastically.
Yeah, he really is. He's authoritative. He is taking control. He played a bit of a Griezmann role, I thought. He often dropped back to a wing and kind of picked up the ball in midfield a few times, which I thought was pretty interesting, giving him a kind of freer role. And I think he played really well. Only had the one shot at goal, which resulted in a goal. But I thought his work rate was good. I think he was disciplined, didn't pick up any stupid bookings. So really positive performance from him. And he's got a case to keep that berth in the starting 11, especially with Griezmann out against Valencia.
I think he has to stay. I think he has to stay. I don't think there's that much competition, quite frankly, in the role that he plays.
Yeah.
That he can be moved out of the team. I think he really does have to play. And as long as he keeps performing, then he has to play, yeah.
He started next to Luciano Vietto, who I was not expecting to start in this game. Now, Vietto could still leave this week, the final week of the transfer window. Interesting performance, I thought, for Vietto, who only played 55 minutes, but his work rate was exceptional. He worked really, really hard to be an irritant off the ball, keep harassing any Las Palmas defender he could. I don't know if he's going to stay or not, because there have been links with a bunch of different teams. Sampdoria reportedly agreed a deal for him, but he has not agreed personal terms yet. What did you think of Vietto's performance? Not really anything to write home about from, you know, an attacking standpoint, but he showed a little bit of Cholismo.
Yeah, he did, and that's good. You know, I think if Simeone is watching and at least he sees that effort, then I think that will go a long way. And, you know, it's the players who don't try, who maybe it doesn't click with, that annoy him the most and will end up going. But if Vietto is going to do that, but he has to do it regularly. And I think he needs to understand that the demands of Atleti are higher than they are at, you know, Atleti's not on the same level as Villarreal or Sevilla, where Vietto was at previously. What he got away with there, like in terms of, like, you know, don't get me wrong, he did very well, but he can't just play very well. He has to produce more. He has to play beyond himself when he's at Atleti, because the demands are that high. Mm-hmm. Atleti are challenging for a title, for Champions Leagues, and Sevilla and Villarreal don't. And Vietto has to realize he must step up. He can't just be the same player. He needs to improve.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the only way he's going to get time when everyone is healthy and when Gamero is back and Griezmann is back. That's the only way he's going to get himself into consideration, is if he works this hard. And it looks like he can do it. He's got the potential to do it. He almost got sent off. He was working so hard. There were a couple fouls where he could have been shown a second yellow card, and Simeone knew it. Like, that's why he hauled him off so early. But it was good to see him working hard. Good to see him. Koke, you and I have talked about Koke before and how he needs to step up as a leader. He needs to step up and show some enthusiasm, charisma, really take control in midfield. And he did that on Saturday. That is the Koke that we need to be seeing.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was his first ever brace as well, wasn't it?
Yep, first ever brace.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think, don't get me wrong, I think Las Palmas were terrible, and maybe we'll get onto them later. And I think they gave a lot of Atleti players freedom. And Koke took advantage, was one of those to take advantage of it. But yeah, it was a lot better. He showed a bit more personality. And again, he's another one who needs to do that more, because I feel like the midfield is on the decline. You know, it's older. You know, Gabby isn't going to be able to play the same way as he was before. Thiago isn't there. So I think Koke has to dig within himself a lot deeper and kind of create a new role for himself and realise his responsibility and status at the club. He's now one of the elder players there, and he really needs to show that more.
Yeah, he keeps moving up the list of top 10 Atleti appearances. Like, he could be the all-time leader in a few years, which is, he's 25 years old. It's frightening. Amazing. But in this game, he was phenomenal. He was really efficient with his touches, didn't take too many of them, distributed the ball really effectively. His two goals were absolutely sensational, especially the overhead kick. That was sensational.
Yeah, I want him to be more dynamic like this, you know, and do this. And it, sometimes you just feel like he doesn't. And I don't know whether it's a result of the system, what he's maybe been told by Simeone, you know, but like, because he has to play a certain role and play within himself to a certain level and watch his positioning more. But he needs to play more aggressively and with more dynamic, because he's got a good shot in him. He's a good passer of the ball. He's a very, very good player. I just feel he doesn't show it enough.
Yeah, and by trying to do everything, he sometimes is guilty of doing nothing, because he can do so many different things, and Simeone doesn't always know what to do with him. So he played a lot on the wing in this game, drifted a bit toward the middle, but he was in control, and it was great to see, and that's the kind of Koke that Atletico need. Because if he is operating like that, Atletico automatically become a much more solid, compact midfield and a lot better team. So that's the Koke we need to see. Thomas Partey. Thomas was amazing in this game. He's a guy that he's become kind of a cult hero at Into the Calderon, but he's now becoming a legitimate player, a legitimate consideration for Simeone.
Yeah, I spoke to somebody at Atleti over the summer about Thomas at length. And he said the feeling was that Thomas would get a lot of minutes this year. And I don't mean just a lot of minutes off the bench. He was going to be really given a chance to become an Atleti player. And again, it goes back to the midfield decline, where I said there is places, opportunities arising in that midfield, and some people need to step up and take them. And I think Thomas is one of them, who's at the front of the queue. And Simeone basically is saying, okay, show me what you got, and the place in the team is yours. And that was what I was told by somebody at Atleti. So that'll be interesting to see. And so far, Thomas is playing really, really well. And I'm so, so glad, because he's a fantastic player who can bring so much, a different dimension, I think, to Atleti.
He really can. He can win the ball with grace, with athleticism. He can also win it with just pure power. He's become a really smart player. He's shown some attacking verve, some attacking impetus, as we saw at the end of this game. He scored a great goal, too, from the edge of the box. Yeah. And he can do a lot in that midfield and really re-energize it. He's a decade younger than Gabby.
He's 24 as well, so I mean, he's not a kid.
No.
But, you know, like, it's exactly, you know, it's not like he's 20-year-old or 19-year-old just coming through. 24 now, he needs to start, like, actually becoming something, like what we know, a defined player of some sort. We need to know what type of player Thomas really is. And this is the season where I think we'll find out, for better or worse. But I hope it's for the better, because I really like him.
Speaking of players who were trying to figure out who they are and where they fit, Lucas Hernandez is an interesting one, because he's backup left back, with Felipe still recovering from his foot injury. Stepped in there again over the weekend, thought he played extremely well, particularly in the air. Led the team in touches, actually, with 64 of them, with not really a stat I expect to see next to Lucas's name. What did you make of his performance, and what do you make of Lucas as we get deeper into this season? He's a center back now, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's always difficult with these players, because you don't want to move them around too much, because it might confuse them and it might halt their development. So you need to say, right, we need to know what type of player you are, and Atleti need to decide what type of player he is, whether he's going to be a centre back or he's going to be a left back, whether he's going to be a key player in the future in terms of a starter, or is he just going to be a rotational player. And I think he's a potential starter. I think he's phenomenal, and for me, you know, the future should be Lucas and Jimenez at the back, the centre back partnership. That's what you'd hope to see in maybe the next 5 years at Atleti, once Godin comes out. And I really, really like Lucas. I love the way he plays the game. I think he's very dependable. He, you know, he's a reliable sort. He can come in at the drop of a hat and, you know, perform and put in a good performance. And that's important, I think, for a player. Mentality-wise, I think Lucas is excellent. He plays very aggressively. but within, you know, within the laws. And I really like the way he approaches the game. He just looks like a very much a Simeone player, and hopefully he's another one who we see coming to the team a lot more this season.
It's just been amazing to me, and I've mentioned it before on this program. Whenever he comes in, he doesn't mess up. He doesn't really make any mistakes. I mean, yeah, I don't think he's really a left back, but he's good enough to do the job in a pinch. And with Felipe probably going to get a little more time off, with Simeone hopefully rotating more before January, he's going to be important. He's going to be important there as cover at left back, and he showed that he can he's shown before, and he showed it again Saturday, that he can certainly do a job there. The back line in general, I thought, was much better, and a lot of that was down to Godin coming back into the team. Just, I think his presence alone was just very calming, gave Atleti a lot more confidence to deal with whatever. Well, Las Palmas didn't throw a whole lot at them, but deal with what Las Palmas threw at them.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's important to have Godin there, because it's a strange time for Atleti, because Godin hasn't really got a set in stone defensive partner. Like,
right.
We can't say that is Jimenez's absolute partner. That is Godin's absolute partner. We don't really know that. So Godin's, you know, regularity and Oblak as well are very key things, I think, to keep that defence together and make sure that Atleti stay built on strong defensive foundations.
Godin still absolutely critical to this team. He wore the captain's band Saturday, and he was the only member of this starting 11 that was over 25 years old.
Yes,
and
that's good to see, because I think Atleti, I did see against Girona, they just looked a little bit dated, and I want to see this more. I want to see a younger, fresher Atleti, some new ideas.
Yeah, an average of 24 years old. The starting 11 against Girona was about 27 years old, and
yeah,
it did show. It really did show in that game. Let's talk about Las Palmas quickly before we shift back to Atleti. This was really bad for them, and they never really play Atleti well, because their style is just what Atleti feed on. But, God, this was just wretched. They're in for a difficult season, I think. They won't be relegation fodder. And they didn't have Vitolo, to be fair. But they really were very poor.
Yeah, it's going to be really difficult for them. And they're working on, you know, they brought in Samba from Barcelona. They've got Agolani as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Manolo Magas will be given maybe 5 or 6 more games at least, unless something else disastrous happens, to integrate the new signings and see if things can be turned around. But it's hard, because he's coming from the Tercera division and coaching the B team to this, and it's a huge step up. You know,
yeah,
he's come up 2 divisions, and it's very, very hard. And I don't care how good of a coach you are, it's very, very hard. It's a difficult environment to work in, and he's finding that. And, you know, Las Palmas have a problem, because I think they've still got a good enough team to stay up there, absolutely, but it was just a case of losing Setien and his style and everything that went with that, Roque Mesa, you know, that everything with went, that was going to be such a hard drop for them, and they're feeling it straight away.
Yeah, losing, not only did they lose Roque Mesa, they lost him in pretty much a cut-rate deal.
Yeah, exactly. They should have got a lot more. The way this market works, he was almost like a free transfer.
Yeah, you can't be selling him for only $13 million. No,
yeah,
that's just... Although, you are a Mauricio Lemos admirer, as am I. Thought he was pretty good in this game. Nearly scored a goal from a free kick at the end of the first half. Just buzzed over the bar. Why do we like Lemos so much, David?
Because he's kind of a mesh of styles. He's got that Uruguayan grit and fire and aggressiveness, but he's also extremely easy on the eye. You know, he's a lovely passer of the ball. He's got this absurd free kick technique,
yes,
and shot on him for a centre back slash DM, you know, which is incredible. And there's just a lot, like, he's very, very quick as well, and he's just got the complete package. And I think I made the point, I think everybody keeps saying, is Lemos going to leave, right? I think he's going to stay. He'll have this season in a bad team, but will stand out in a bad team, and that always bodes well for a player, because you can see the character of someone, and somebody's going to get a good player next summer, I think. It's not going to be expensive either, especially, again, I thought in this market, you know, the key phrase, but they're going to get him for maybe 25, 30 million, and that, I'm sorry, for a player of his quality, is going to be extremely, extremely cheap.
Yeah, that's a really reasonable deal for whoever gets him. You think he stays in Spain?
Given the money that's on offering in the Premier League, then he'll probably score the Premier League. He'll probably be at Manchester City or Chelsea or something next season, and I'd completely understand why. But I mean, I'd love to see him in Spain, but there's not too many clubs who have that sort of money available to them and the opening, I think, for him. You know, maybe he would be an option for Atleti, but like I say, they've got Lucas and Jimenez and then Savic and Godin, so there's your four slots maybe at centre-back, and then does he come in a defensive midfield? I don't know, because I see him as a centre-back in the future. I kind of see him as more of the natural heir to Pepe at Real Madrid, actually.
Mm, interesting. I could see that. Back to Atletico now, and we mentioned this earlier, we touched on this earlier, that this is a younger team that took the field in this game, and this is the kind of direction, I think you and I both agree that this is the direction Atleti need to go, because Simeone is, I think he's starting to realize he can't keep relying on the Gabby, Juanfran, Torres brigade. That's just not a feasible solution when you're trying to navigate through the first few months before you get reinforcement, or reinforcements plural, in January. I think there are some transformative players in this team. Players like Tomas, players like Yannick Carrasco, when Carrasco is motivated, a player like Jose Jimenez. Do you think these are transformative talents?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Atleti need to be putting themselves in a phase of transition. I think they've been putting it off for a few years, and they've kind of been, they've lost players, or players have declined, and then they've kind of replaced them in the sense that they haven't really, because it's been the players who are already there, and no one knew. Too new has really emerged as an Atleti player. You know, very much the key players, I think, Atleti are all ones who have been there a while. For me, I still see the most important player Atleti is Felipe Luis. Hmm. I just think everything stems from him personally, and then he's part of that famous back line as well. So, you know, like, players like him are still around and are key as well, but they can't go on forever, and Atleti need to have a bit of foresight and look at replacements for everyone, I think, just about. But I think this is the year that definitely Juanfran, Gabby and Torres need to be really, really, really phased out.
Yeah, especially. And Gabby was great last season, but there are younger, more energetic options in the middle of the park. Torres,
and
we do know what Torres
brings. I don't mean even like just dropping him altogether, you know, like Gabby, thanks for everything. I just meant like just phasing him,
sure.
You know, giving him less games, preserving him, because he goes through a lot of work and he needs to have an heir sort of thing, somebody who can come in and take that Gabby role. And that's very, very important, I think, for Atleti, because Gabby is the general on the field. He is the one player who is his manager on the field. And that's a very important, you know, figure. So Atleti need to start looking into this, and there's certain areas of the team, like the ones I've just pointed out, that perhaps need more attention than others.
Yeah, I've got another question about that, and it's going to segue into another kind of mini discussion I want to have. I remember you tweeted a couple months ago, I think, that Atleti really needed to keep Teo Hernandez, and they really needed to buy Danny Ceballos. Those were two guys who could transform the way Atleti played. Of course, Atleti did not end up with either player. They both went to Real Madrid. Don't worry, I don't think about it very much. But do you think there are those kinds of talents in this team already? Do Atleti need to go for broke? And are Atleti in a situation where they need to desperately buy those players? Or are they already here?
I don't think they're already there. I think there's some players there who can certainly produce more. You know, I think guys like Jimenez will only get better. I think he's going to be a world-class centre-back. Correa, there's a lot more to come from him. I still think he can extract more from Vieto. Thomas, we've already talked about.
Yep.
But I still think Atleti need, I don't know, it would have been great. Like I said, I think Ceballos was the one I looked at, and I thought, my God, he just looks like an Atleti player. And it's a shame that didn't happen, but I mean, it's pointless talking about things that didn't happen, you know, it's pointless, it really is. So I don't know, I still feel like Atleti need that next someone, you know, who can be the centre of the star of the team. They've got Saul, of course, you know, he's going to be really, really important, but I just think they needed a little bit more, considering the ambitions of Atleti, the aspirations that they have. They needed maybe a little bit more, but don't get me wrong, they're not empty in terms of talent. There's lots of players there still, but I think they could have done with certain players in certain areas. Potted out.
Yeah, and the transfer ban hurt that. Obviously, the club's transfer policy has hurt that with the inability to get some deals done. Before I mention that, though, can you tell me why Jose Jimenez is in the last 10 months of his contract without any renewal whatsoever? We haven't talked about this much on Into the Calderon yet, but why? What are Atletico doing with Jimenez here?
I really don't know. Again, I'm completely as much in the dark as you about this, and I don't really understand why his contract has been allowed to do this, and especially because Atleti have been so good with contracts as well. It's not like they've, you know, they've got a, you know, like a history of letting people go or anything like that. You know, it's really, really strange, and they need to sort it out.
And Jimenez said over the summer that if Atletico offered him a contract for life, he would sign it. Like, you, I don't know, but you need to sign that guy up if you have someone that committed to the cause. And you're right.
He's already said, he came out and said if they give him a lifetime contract, I would sign it without hesitation.
Right.
I mean...
you sign that player. He wants to play for you. I mean, it's just so strange. And you're right, Atletico have been really good with the renewals. Koke, Saul both signing long-term renewals. Carrasco's deal got done last year. Griezmann got a new deal this summer. Lucas got another new deal. I mean... The Oblak's deal is probably next, although it hasn't been announced yet. But you have all these guys getting these bumper new contracts, and Jose Mas, very curiously, is not on that list. And he could start negotiating with teams in 4 months.
Yeah, and I mean, like I say, I think he's a potential world-class, you know, talent. And I mean, he's already said, you know, like, the Premier League does interest him. But, like, either way, like, it doesn't matter what league interests him. He wants to stay at Leti, and he just said, just give me a contract. I really don't know what's going on there, because the people who work around the club, they haven't really said anything about it as well. So you're talking about the journalists who are the closest to the club, and it's strange that this is a very, just really quiet sort of situation.
Yeah, that's very... It's a little concerning, because he is going to be a massive player, especially if Lucas is off to Manchester City next summer, which was reported. He may have been gone even if the transfer ban had been overturned, so that's going to be something we keep an eye on.
Atleti are not a club who can afford to let players like Jimenez go, I don't think.
Yeah.
With the way the money situation is at the club and how they are, they're very tight-fisted, I think, before spending money on players. And like I said, I don't think there's that many players like coming through who are ready to accept the demands of the club, and Jimenez is one of the few who can. So they just can't let him go, no matter what. I think it would be a staggering loss.
Yeah, it would be stunning if that happened, but we'll see. You know, Atleti have done crazy things before. We'll see. But let's talk about the club's transfer policy at large. Now, you have been a bit of a critic on Atleti's transfer market dealings this summer, and I think justifiably so. It's been such a strange summer. Atleti have... They nearly screwed up the Vitolo deal. They actually did screw up the Vitolo deal before it got amazingly resuscitated. What are Atleti's failings in the transfer market to you? And what to you is wrong with Atleti's transfer policy and their dealings? And at boardroom level, what are the issues in your mind?
Yeah, it's funny. I've just wrote another article having a go at this, which will probably be out. It's just to do with Diego Costa and how that deal has been handled.
Oh, boy.
So I've just wrote that. So it's funny that you asked this question. But yeah, I just think that, you know, I think the success on the field, what Simeone has done, Griezmann's rise to fame, these sort of things have all covered up, I think, what's been going on at the club in the fact that they've been ran in kind of a bit of a joke manner. There's things I really can't repeat, I'd love to repeat, but what I've been told in conference about Atleti, especially with the TAS dealings, that really stunned me. And that kind of confirmed to me my worst fears about how the club was being run. In this kind of, I don't know, they're kind of winging it sort of thing from day to day, and there's no real plan put in place there. And I think the Vitolo deal showed Simeone had got frustrated. You know, there's evidence there of him making urgent calls to people to say, look, we need to get this deal done no matter what. And I'm not saying he was threatening to walk or anything, but I think it might have made things a lot more difficult for him to be around the club in that situation. And I just don't think the board, those who run the club, have met Simeone halfway. I think he's been left hung out to dry a little bit by the club in terms of the squad that he's been left with, replacements, signings, things like that.
It really is kind of a shame because of everything that he has done on the pitch and how he has, you know, Atleti are now second in the UEFA rankings and they are now regarded as one of the best teams on the continent.
Yeah, but you need to look at how much they spend. They don't spend money. You know, like, when they do spend money, it's only after sales. You know,
right.
You've got to look at the players who have left the club and the money that they've been taken. They've been taken in before Vitolo's deal was completed. They're trying to raise more money by selling Don Vieto so they can get Diego Costa in. And I know to people that looks like, okay, they're just trying to sell players who are fringe players and raise some money to bring in players for somebody who will be a first-team player, but it's not really like that. If Atleti are ambitious, you look at all the teams who they compete against, they have very, very deep squads and talented squads, and they buy, you know, really, really astutely. Atleti aren't really doing that. They're just doing, they're raising cash and then buying players, raising cash again and then buying players. and that's how it's working. And it shouldn't be. Atleti should have a bit more ambition. They should be pushing the bar a little bit more.
And it's interesting that you mentioned those sales, because that was going to be my next question, is that Atleti, if Vieto does go this week, Atleti stand to make probably $90 million this summer, and they will probably be spending about that on Vitolo and Costa if Costa comes. So Atleti can then say they have broken even or made a profit in a year where they were banned from making signings.
Yeah, exactly. It's bizarre. I don't think they can be run like this and then keep the success, I think. Because Simeone is still here, the success is there still, and Atleti is still fighting at the top because he's there and this identity that he has created. If he wasn't there, then the drop-off might be quite significant.
Oh, yeah. That is a concern. It's always been a concern, dating back to when we first heard the rumors that, you know, he could go to PSG, he could go, you know, to Manchester City, he could go to Inter, go anywhere. But it looks like that he's closing in on a renewal back to 2020, which was the length of his first extension back in 2015. I think that'd be great news for everyone. I've written about this. I wrote about it last week, in fact, that Simeone is starting to make tweaks to the team's style, getting more versatile, not just with individual players, with the whole team itself. Like going to the 3-4-3 against Girona, which I wrote about, that was, to me, a pretty important moment, because Simeone would not have done that a year or two ago. And it shows that he seems committed to it.
He needs to do this more. He needs to do this a lot more. I completely agree with what you're saying, you know, and identifying these tweaks, because I do, you know, I love Simeone, and he's one of the best coaches in the world, easily. But if there's one thing that he's guilty of, he can be a little bit stubborn.
Yep.
Systematically, and also with players as well, you know, sometimes I see players and I think, I wish he'd be given more of a chance there, and he doesn't give them a chance, and that's very, very frustrating. So if he can show a little bit of versatility, and maybe the transfer ban opens him up a little bit more, maybe it says, okay, maybe I have to try these things, maybe I have to give these players opportunities.
You know, whatever goes, because that has always been, I think, his biggest flaw, is that the lack of rotations and the consistently just sticking to one style. Even though the last couple of seasons he has tried to experiment with different formations, he's tried to get the team to play differently, play, you know, a shorter passing style, play quicker, play, be more comfortable in possession. Not everything is taken, but I think this is a very important year for those kind of tweaks to occur.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he just needs to have the patience to see them through, because I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. He doesn't want to maybe lose too much ground at the top while he tests out the new system. And so that's why he keeps reverting back to the old way to keep them up there. But I think there has to be a period of it's like what I said before. I think there has to be a period of transition. I think this season needs to be the period of transition in terms of players, individuals, and the system as well.
Do you think a Diego Costa deal gets done this week?
Yeah, I think it's going to get done. I think it's going to get across the line out of pure... I think both teams are just going to get sick of it existing, and Chelsea are going to see they can't have this guy lying around the club. Well, he's not even at the club, he's somewhere in Brazil. So they can't just have him lying around there, this player sitting on their books when they can get money for him. But look, Atleti need to come with the money, and it goes back to my frustration with this board and how they're being run. Exactly. Atleti's done nothing in terms of putting the Costa deal through. You know, Costa's done everything. This is two summers in a row now that he's put himself on the line for Atleti, and it's not really been backed up. Last time they went out and signed, you know, they brought in Gamero. Last time Costa tried to force the move, and then he started hearing this noises about bringing in Lacazette, which obviously didn't happen because of the ban. So Atleti need to really just do it, just get the deal done. The money is there. They're just unwilling to use it.
They needed to get this done for about 6 weeks. I'm tired of this, man. All three parties are just acting like children. You can say that the Costa Chelsea standoff is really interesting from the standpoint of the player versus club relationship, and that kind of feud and the bridges burning there, no pun intended, has been pretty interesting. But I'm tired of this. I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of thinking about it. I'm tired of writing about it. Just get it done. You know, like
absolutely. I just think Atleti's been the worst party in this, but probably. Like they're the one who's least talked about, and that's what's really, really annoying me. Because I think like the fans need to understand how bad things actually are, and you know Chelsea's asking for, I think, a very good amount for Costa, considering the way this market is,
especially the market,
his age, his quality. You know, so I think it's a good price. and Atleti are kind of like lowballing. Well, they're not even lowballing because they haven't even made a bid. They're not even trying to, you know, but the noises that they make is they want him for a cut price, and there's no reason for Chelsea to give him away on a cut price.
No, there's not. You're not going to get him for 30 million. Not in this market. Like, I've said this for a while.
That's the problem. Atleti think they can get him for 30 million, and they cannot. And they've got to stop thinking that they can. This is the problem. You know, a wise board would know that they have to pay the premium.
Yeah, it's been very frustrating. Just I've just held the line at compromise at 40 million, 45 million, and just call it a day. Like, I've been toting that banner for a month, solid month,
yeah.
And it hasn't happened. But there have been whispers that they could do a deal outside of the transfer window, which I don't know if it's heading that way. I really hope it doesn't. I hope it gets done this week, so we can all move on from it. And it's going to be awkward, especially because Atleti and Chelsea are now in the same Champions League group, which, of course, it just had to happen.
Yeah.
It just had to freaking happen. So let's talk about the Champions League now for a minute. This is our first podcast since the draw was held, and I think it's a pretty interesting group for Atleti, and it'll be challenging. The duels with Antonio Conte are going to be pretty fun, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. I really do. And, you know, I think Roma are a major work in progress.
Yeah.
Karabag are kind of like the unknowns that you just don't want to write off completely, because it is the unknown. It simply is that, and you don't know what to expect, really. And that is always dangerous at this level of competition. And then Chelsea will be an incredible battle, because it's Conte, and his style has got parallels to Simeone, so they could end up cancelling each other out, and it's a strange one. But it's a very, very tough group, I think, for Atleti. A really, really tough group. I mean, I don't really like where Roma are right now, but I just wouldn't want to write them off.
Yeah, I kind of think they're a wild card in all this. I mean, if they could be brilliant, or they could be just an absolute nightmare. I mean, they haven't started the Serie A season very well, but I think they could be a wild card for sure. And this is the third year in a row Atleti are making a trip east to a former Soviet republic. Those trips are always tough. Those are always inhospitable grounds, and they're long, long trips. So that adds another element of toughness to this group.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, you know, I think it's probably one of the toughest groups around. And Atleti's experienced in this competition, you know, like really, really experienced. And they can play this out really, really well. They know what to do, what's required. So there shouldn't be too many surprises, even though Karabag are very much unknown. But Atleti should be able to navigate this well enough, despite it being tough, I think.
Yeah, looking at the fixture list, there aren't too many post-group games are not very difficult. Atleti go to Levante in November, that is after hosting Roma, and we know Atletico are going to lose that, because they always lose at Levante. Yeah, there is a Madrid derby before that game against Roma, so that's going to be a really tough week, hosting Madrid, hosting Roma, then going to Levante. But other than that, I mean, I think the toughest game will be away to Celta after Atleti come back from Azerbaijan to play Karabag. But before the Karabag game, on October 15th, Atletico play Barcelona.
So. Yeah, and you would think by this time, you know, like when you look at the games, and you know, you've got the game at the end of October and then the one in middle of November, you know, you'd hope by then Atleti are a lot more up to speed in terms of rotation, in terms of fitness, rotation, and they maybe have got another system that they can use, and players are coming in and performing, because that's always hard with rotation, you know. It's good enough having the players there, but will they come in? You know, Barcelona showed that, you know, when it came to their rotation, it just didn't work for them, despite having the likes of, you know, a good player like Andre Gomes, you know. So you hope that Atleti, their rotational players, will be able to come in and do a good job.
I wouldn't say I love the draw. It wasn't my preference, but I think it's a winnable group, and I think the battles with Chelsea in particular are going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, they're probably going to be the ones what are decisive in terms of who wins the group. I think it's going to be between I'd be really surprised if anybody else won the group apart from Atleti or Chelsea. It's going to be those two. But I think Atleti can consider themselves favourites in this group. I really do.
Yeah. Looking from mid-November to the end of the group stage, Atleti host Real Madrid, host Roma, go to Levante, host Real Sociedad, go to Chelsea, go to Betis. That's a pretty difficult sextet of games right there.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, you will know a lot more about Atleti's squad for this season by then, you know. Once they deal with those games, we'll know a lot more about the character of them and where they are in terms of challenging, like, from onwards after those games.
That's all I got, David.
Okay, man. It's been good.
Well, thanks for coming on, man. I'll ask you to stick around for just a minute while I complete the sign-off message. That is David Cartledge. You can follow him on Twitter at David JACA. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Barron. That's JBBEREN. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. You can also subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Cult Generale Chat on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. And our Patreon page is now live. Patreon page is up and running, went up this morning. So hit us up at patreon.com/CultGeneraleChat if you want to contribute to the show, give back to the show like we give the show to you. That would be much appreciated. We'll be back next week. Until then, adios.